of the games, stay muted unless you're called on. We'll try to get everyone who raises their hand. You can also pose questions on chat and Jill will read them. This is going to be recorded and posted, so keep that in mind. So let me just sort of say, so the idea here is that we've been through 1 week of the online instruction. We just like to hear from people how it went, what your thoughts are. Very interested in getting people to speak from all different types of teaching. So they're the large lecture folks, they're the seminar folks, they're the studio folks. So as broad of a snapshot as we can get, the better. We're very interested in the interaction you've had with your students. Maybe, Nima, you might say a few things about that and what we're trying to deduce from the community so that we can give advice or talk to higher ups and things like that.
Okay, so just to add to what Charlie said, you know, we've been hearing some, there are various folks at the university who are reaching out to students as well to see how this experiment is not, it's not an experiment, this sort of the situation that how it's working itself out. And there's been concerns raised about sort of workload going up or difficulties in terms of sort of keeping up and things like that. Also, I think issues raised about, you know, it's about this business of trying to continue as normal, if one wants to call it that, in a time of exception and what that means. Students reporting, for example, feeling, you know, that it just feels really difficult to be thinking about class and doing all these things when there are people dying and losing livelihoods and stuff like that. And other students really being appreciative of how all of you are moving forwards and taking our classes forward. So, you know, there's going to be no, Charlie and I have been talking about this a lot, there's going to be no one solution that fits everybody's needs, and we completely accept that and the uncertainty that comes with it and the difficulty that comes with it. But we do want to talk about it, because one of the things that we've realized in all our interactions with students, with the, you know, the sort of issues that have been brought to us, that it is important to name these issues and to call them out and to talk about them. And somehow the flatness of the screen and our interaction virtually requires us to be quite forthcoming about talking about these difficult issues. And so we're hoping that that we can do two things in this hour that we have together. One is, of course, to hear your experiences in terms of how the classes are going and all of that, but also to hear your experiences around this, around the difficulties of teaching at a time like this, right? Where there might be grief and loss and anxiety, even more anxiety than normal to deal with, and how you're trying to do that. So I'll stop and we'll just open up for comments.
So please raise your hand and we'll call on you.
Dexter Cozen.
Okay, Dexter.
Hi, I'm here. So I have been pretty lucky, I think, in comparison to a lot of my colleagues, in that I'm teaching a graduate course. It's the first year PhD course on programming languages, and I have about 50 students in it, but they're all grad students, mostly math and computer science, some upper level undergrads. And I don't really have a lot of, I don't use slides usually. I love the interaction of the classroom. I like the classroom experience. So I usually just stand up and give my lecture at a whiteboard and use markers to write on the board as I'm going. And I wanted to try to maintain as much of that in-class feeling as possible. So what I did was I took a rather low-tech solution. I got myself a nice desktop camera, document camera, that's sitting on my desk. I can show you what it looks like if you're interested. And there's some nice software that goes with it. So I'll share my screen if I can.
Well, I don't think, are we allowing people to share screens?
If you don't want to, that's okay. I can just describe it.
Yeah, that might be better, yeah.
Okay, so I just have a document camera and I just give my lecture as if I'm standing in front of a whiteboard, but instead it's just my face in this little box and the document camera pointing down at my pad, paper, and I just write on the paper and it's just like giving a lecture. And the students, I just ask the students to unmute and ask a question, just jump in if they have a question. And so far it's been pretty good. People have been doing that. I haven't noticed a lot of anxiety amongst the students. They seem to be dealing with it pretty well. We talk a little bit before, I start up the Zoom session a little before class and we chat a little bit. And people seem to be dealing with it okay. I don't have a lot of issues with time zones. I have one student in India and he logs on, he wants to see the lectures live. So he logs on at 7:30 at night, I guess.
Do you have undergraduates in the class, Dexter?
I'm sorry?
Do you have any undergraduates in the class?
Yes, I have several. A lot of them are in Ithaca, actually, they told me. So, but I've asked them how they're doing and everybody seems to be coping okay. Nobody's expressing angst. So it seems like it's going pretty smoothly. I know that some of my colleagues, Nate Foster and Michael Clarkson and other people teaching very large classes in the computer science department are going through several issues and trying to deal with a lot of logistical issues, but they haven't cropped up for me. So I feel quite lucky. And it's nice to be able to maintain that that in-class atmosphere as much as possible. And I think we've been pretty successful with that.
Okay, thanks.
Sure.
Jill, anyone else?
We have a question. I've been hearing concerns from students that they are concerned about the sustainability of spending 5 hours or more a day on Zoom. Faculty too, someone chimed in. It's very hard to spend that much time in front of a screen. Someone said they ended up yesterday in a 3-hour co-taught class and was totally exhausted.
Yeah, well, I think we're all noticing it. At first, like, I never used Zoom until, like, 3 weeks ago, and then, hey, it's just kind of fun, but then the thrill goes away, and then, of course, you have just the volume of the screen time, remembering that students have 4, maybe 5 classes, and we've heard comments that there's more time involved because you have to sort of, I can't actually get the math, but there were arguments that you have to watch the lecture before and then during. Are people getting them complaints or understand why more time has to be spent? Now, I know the medium isn't the best, so maybe you just have to go over things more, but I couldn't quite follow the math behind comments from students that I have to spend much more time, like double the time to track the lectures.
Do you have Narissa Russell?
Narissa?
Unmuting. Okay, I got myself unmuted. Yeah, so I'm definitely hearing that. So I have a seminar class that's basically going fine and we're kind of fine-tuning how to do it, but that's no problem. But a lecture class, I have the students, well, I think it's probably a few vocal ones who are really very rebellious, but there's general complaints about exactly this time issue. And it is that, yeah, so they look at the lectures or the PowerPoints beforehand, and then we have these meetings, and especially in the beginning, in part because they wanted to spend a lot of time talking about how just the mechanics of the class and how it's going to work. So it wasn't all covering the class material, which I think actually would take less than usual 50 minutes, but you do have that. Or, you know, online Canvas discussions for those who can't make the Zoom meetings in addition to what would have been sitting in class for 15 minutes. So it is extra time. I have to say it's extra time for me too. I am doing nothing but class prep. and that's a real problem. So it is more time intensive all around. So I'm really sympathetic to that. And I'm working and I've just am putting out a survey right now after we've got all of us a week under our belts to try to have them identify what are their particular things that are problematic and not working, because mostly I'm just hearing about the whole thing is too much and trying to figure out how. I mean, I've already dropped a week of content because we lost a week, and I think I'm going to, you know, let them opt out of some of the written assignments to try and reduce it a little bit. But yeah, I'm trying to figure out how I can make this workable for all of us, because I understand they've got other classes too, and they are saying that all of their classes are like this and their workload has gone up, you know, hugely.
You're in anthropology. Can you just tell us a little bit about the two courses you just spoke about?
Yeah, so the seminar, it's a combined undergraduate-graduate seminar. It's mostly graduate students. They're all in the same time zone, so we're all in the same time zone. And so I had set it up with a lot of it being done in forms of written discussions, because I wasn't sure how the Zoom was going to go, but it actually seems to work pretty well. And so I think we're switching back to largely what we had before, with just in Zoom instead of in the same room having discussion. But we found it sort of useful to be posting discussion questions beforehand. So that's kind of what we're headed for. The lecture course, one on early agriculture around the world, and that is, it's got 65 students at the moment, and two TAs, thank heavens, who have been terrific, but they're finding it more work also than it had been previously. And definitely a lot of students who are acting out or disappearing or, you know, complaining one way or the other. So I spent a lot of time fielding student complaints, you know, racking my brains, having spent the 3 weeks prior, you know, desperately trying to make a format that would actually deliver the content, you know, now trying to rethink everything and make it something that can actually work for the students without, that will get something approximating what the course normally does, but without being this huge tax on everyone's time.
Okay, thank you.
David Delchamps.
David Delchamps, electrical engineering.
Electrical and computer engineering, Charlie. the students haven't complained about more time. I hereby will. It's essentially double time for me, FaceTime with the students, because unlike Dexter, I pre-recorded my lectures, and then during the class hours, I go on Zoom with whoever wants to show up. Now, what's interested me about this is that I have two classes this semester. One of them has about 75, 80 kids. In that big class, only about an average of 20 students have shown up, and they've been sort of the same people both times so far. And my theory is that people think of this as office hours, and some people think of it as compulsory office hours. And they're the ones who might think that they're like spending more time than they should have to, you know. But no one has said that yet. I'm just theorizing, you know. Some of my most engaged students don't come to those or haven't yet. So I don't know what's going to happen going forward. I thought there might be a crowd control problem. So on the advice of the undergraduate dean in engineering, I got a TA to moderate, and I was going to switch hosts with him, and he was going to handle all the chat, but nothing was forthcoming. So, hey, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. So the content delivery, I someone said on chat a minute ago that Zoom can be more exhausting. I second that. Okay. Part of it is because I'm trying to get them to talk, get them to say, what do you guys want? You know, I want to optimize this for you. You know, this is for you guys. So what should we be doing here? You want to talk about this or that? Ask me a question, you know, and there's a lot of that going on rather than me up there giving my slick lecture. Okay. So that's what I have to say so far after 1 week. Yeah.
Thanks, David. Well, you see some hands up. Let's do Risa and then Robbie. Risa.
Okay, great. Thank you. And thanks for setting this up. I think the more we interact with each other, the better. I actually happen to be in a mood today where I have actually started thinking that maybe Zoom is really genuinely bad for our health. You know, in a certain way, it's joking. In other ways, you know, my head hurts really a lot right now from all the multiple meetings, Zoom meetings back to back, that we're engaged with. So it's not only the exhaustion of teaching, which I agree with everything that I've heard about how much extra energy it is in multiple ways to try to create a sense of connection through a disconnected medium, but that as faculty, we're also being drained and pulled in lots of different ways, depending on the committees we're already on and the attempts to try to just kind of do business as usual. So I think we all try to do everything as well as we ever did, but the reality is that everything has changed. So I really do worry about sort of faculty health and welfare. The other thing that I want to mention, and I don't know, Charlie, if this is going to be on the agenda next week, if when we have the Faculty Senate meeting, but I have some very real concerns about academic freedom and shared governance in relation to what I fear will be pressure for faculty to do more online courses in the future to address issues of financial constraints. You know, as a temporary crisis measure, I think we're all pitching in and trying to do our best here, of course, but I have some very real worries about losing the ability to assert collective governance over this and individual academic freedom. Because to me, you know, there's just no question about the fact that these online courses are inferior to being able to engage and teach in the classroom for some of the reasons that we've already heard, and, you know, there would be others. But I really worry about that, and I hope we can talk about the academic freedom and governance issues here.
Right, yeah, but we're going to use what we learned in this session, the topics that are raised very much will feed into next week's Senate session. We'll have a chunk of time to talk about things like that. Ravi from Mathematics.
Hi, Charlie. To respond to your question about the time with the students, so first off, I'm not teaching this semester, but I'm chair of a department that's teaching a few dozen undergraduate classes, and I sort of have a sense of what's going on in most of them. Yeah, people, like to echo what David said, people are preparing materials beforehand and then sort of running maybe something more like a section than like a lecture, or more like an active learning environment. So it does require students to jump in ahead of time and do some work. I mean, and now I think they have to do it more than they might have had to when they were on campus. One thing in regard to sort of the thing being different and inferior, maybe, we've talked a lot, and I've talked with a lot of different people within and without Cornell. We give prelims, that's what we do in math, and there's just no way to emulate that. I mean, so basically we're giving a lot of open book prelims for 24 hours. We're just, to some extent, crossing our fingers on the issue of cheating and hoping that that won't be a big deal, or maybe that we're prepared to live with it for one semester. And we have, you know, there are little devices you can do, but there's no cure-all that I know of or that any of my friends in other places know of. Thanks.
Okay. Jill, how about the chat question?
So Charlie Green contributes that from what he's read, using Zoom can be more exhausting for faculty and possibly students because we expend more energy processing visual cueing. And Beth Miles contributes that it's harder to generate energy and community in the room over Zoom, so we're pouring physical and vocal energy forward. And someone else said they did good news scenario was that they had two PhD B exams this week, and the grad school's online forms work perfectly. Let's see, spending time and energy trying to keep a discussion going is what creates a lot of stress for me. Students aren't used to speaking to a screen, so there are long moments of awkward silence that we feel we need to fill to keep participants engaged.
Is there anyone out there who's somewhat of a veteran of giving online courses? Is it like we're at the 1 week point? Does it get better? In other words, the more you do it, or is the exhaustion factor just going to keep growing? Is there anyone out there again who has a lot of, maybe done a whole semester or a complete course online, and if they can remember how it went as you got more experience?
Who is our PDP guest?
Yeah.
I don't know who that is.
That would be Pedro Perez here, and I wanted to thank you first for holding this this session, and I wanted to share a bit of my experience because I'm sure we all know this, but it bears reminding that online courses and distance teaching are two different things. I teach at the Dyson School, senior lecturer. My course has 425 students. I'm fortunate to have a TA team of undergraduates, fairly large. So I just took it online and created a set of modules, had some of that ready, which was really good. Added some others, so I completely feel for the comment about having to teach twice. I have done that in a flipped environment. And, you know, I have spent this week basically reintroducing the course, introducing the online environment, and telling students, you know, you can do this and you can do all the assignments that are left in our course, Introduction to Business Management, by using all this material. Attendance to class, of course, went from 400 students in the first lecture to about 120 today. I don't know where it is going to go, but so far, so good.
Thank you. Thank you. Another thing I'd be interested in hearing is just if you have TAs, how they're figuring in the overall process, and what that those interactions look like. I'd be interested in that. Jill, anything on the chat line there?
No, it just says a couple of comments. Small classes, students seem to not have trouble speaking up. And I'm not sure what this refers to. I taught a lot online. The answer is it depends. Feel free to call on me today. I don't know who that is. TMN46.
Yeah, but I think Ashim Datta wanted to speak. I saw a hand go up. So okay. You'll have to unmute yourself.
Hi, this is Ashim Datta. I'm in biological and environmental engineering, and I teach an undergraduate course in mathematical modeling, but it's a project-based course, so a lot of it is in their project, building a simulation, which is has been going okay. There's two, and a lot of it was done, actually, the major part was done before all the chaos. So there are two things I want to share. One is in terms of the content delivery, I decided to go a synchronous way because I had a student in Korea who's now back in Korea, and one is in LA. And so it'll be hard. And so I had quite a bit of experience in building some of this content. So I just have a Microsoft Surface, and I already had PowerPoints. So I recorded on those, and then I put them up in Canvas. I say it this way, but 1 hour took about 5 hours to really script it and do it right. And I'm also part of the ALI initiative, so I have a person helping build active learning type questions and so on. So with that seemed to be going well, and I do not have anything during the normal class hour. So for now, until the last 2 weeks, for now it's totally online. And my difficulty with the class is right now, I'm not getting a feel of, you know, exactly how they are feeling and where they are. So I invited them to a separate session, and hey, just come and say hi. Nobody showed up. I did that for the office hours, and I'm not surprised nobody showed up, because the normal office hours nobody shows up. Then the other thing I wanted to share was the exam. So I did the regular exam. So I gave them very detailed directions that 10 minutes before 7:30 on Thursday, last night, I gave, you know, I will email the exam, and you can write out on any piece of paper, take a picture, and upload to Canvas. Other than me messing up, I don't want to get in that. It seemed to go okay, except there are some glitches that I did not anticipate. So for example, one student said 10 minutes later, and I'm on the video here, say, I still did not get the question. And he was chatting with me and so on. So the connection was good. So for whatever reason. And then he also showed up in Zoom, not as a guest. So I don't know, I have to talk to him how he got in and whether that's related to the fact that. So my point is it didn't seem to go perfectly the way that I was expecting. And I don't know if I should be doing it for long term, because my questions were not totally open book, but they're tending that way. And I'm completely depending on, you know, they keeping their honor, and I cannot totally guarantee the integrity. For one thing, my questions were not such that they can actually just look up in a book. So that why I felt a little bit. And then when everything was over, there was again a small surprise, almost a teething problem. The first person said, "Professor, I cannot upload." And then the TA is also available, and she said, "Okay, yeah, let me see what. Okay, let me do this," and then things work. So I think the next time it'll go smoother. I would love to have some comments on this way of doing exam. It seemed to work for this time.
Thank you very much. This brings up, when we think about exams, and as you sort of said, they're tending towards open book. In other words, more challenging questions. Mm-hmm. And then I think we're seeing comments from students about that, because, you know, things are harder because the professors are ratcheting up the difficulty of the questions because they can't give standard closed book questions. Anyway, more comments. Jill, what's up?
So Jennifer Wissing and David Delchamps in line, as well as Tracy is who was speaking before in the chat.
Okay, so pick somebody.
Jennifer.
Sure, hi. Thanks again for having this meeting. This is Jenny Wissing from the Econ Department. I just wanted to share a couple of things that I'm doing in the introductory microeconomics. So there's over 400 in that class. And I was fortunate because I actually teach it in a distance learning format for the School of Continuing Education in summer sessions. So I had panoptos of all the content already in the can because of the distance learning class. So I'm flipping the class where during the synchronous lecture time, we actually highlight things and go over materials that I know students struggle with, and go over problem solving. We were doing iClicker questions in lecture, so instead of doing iClicker, I'm using the chat, and I propose the iClicker question like we would have done in lecture, and then I can, actually it's more fun than in lecture with the iClicker, because I can see their names scrolling through the chat and see the answers they're giving and can refer to them by name because I see it there in the chat screen. So that's actually a lot of fun and going well. I almost feel we're engaging more personally because I can call out to them by name. And they've been much more active, I think, that way doing it. Comparing doing the distance learning now remotely with the distance learning that I've done a lot, there I was only doing it for 3 weeks. And it was very intensive. The students were expected to do a whole semester in the matter of 3 weeks. And that was about the only thing they were doing. So I appreciate some of the earlier comments about the kids actually taking the equivalent of 3 or 4 distance learning classes simultaneously. So I'm sure that that's going to create some different stress and anxiety than before. About getting the students to ask questions during the Zoom, what I've actually done is in my Canvas incorporated a discussion board, and one of them that's pinned to the top is a kind of request list, you know, like on the radio when you request songs, and it basically just says, please highlight quote unquote this in the Zoom lecture. And so they're populating that with things that they're finding difficult that then I can actually use when I begin the Zoom lectures for the next time we meet. And then I have five TAs that have sections. And so you asked Charlie about what I'm doing with the TAs. So they're actually all doing and coordinating among each other 50 minutes basically broken down into 10-minute segments of problem solving or introduction and summary that they're posting in modules on our Canvas page. And they're coordinating, so they're not doing the same thing. So actually a plus of this is you get to go to all the TA sections if you want. You know, you could hunt through and you could see if someone actually covered a question that you were having difficulty with. And now we've got a bigger menu because everybody's welcome to everybody's modules. And then during the time that they should be having section, we're basically doing that as, like other people have said, office hours and manning the discussion board so that students know that that TA will be manning the discussion board during the time they would have been having section in addition to their office hours. So far, I think it's going pretty smoothly that way, all things considered. And the last thing I'll mention is that when you're talking about some of the exams, I don't know if you guys are familiar with on Canvas, if you want to create an exam, you can create a bunch of different test banks by topic. And then what you can do is create questions in your exam that randomly draw from the different topics. So in that way, if you put enough questions in each topic, you create an exam, no two students have exactly the same exam. And so I'm hoping that will help a little bit with possibly students getting online and talking to each other or on the phone when they're supposed to be taking their exam. I plan to do an exam where they get a 24-hour window of opportunity to take it, and the exam's 90 minutes. Once they start the exam, Canvas will time it, and they have to finish it within that 90-minute interval. But no two students will get the same exam because I'm structuring it using these test banks in Canvas. And if anybody's interested in more about that, please feel free to email me and we can privately Zoom chat and I'll take you through it and show you how easy it is to do.
Thanks a lot. So I know there are these technical things we can do to attempt to minimize cheating and so on. You seem to have quite a bit of experience teaching online. I'm just wondering, over your career, has your view of exams and academic integrity morphed into something different? Ravi mentioned earlier, you know, maybe this is something we just have to put up with. I mean, what's your, has your view of exams and academic integrity changed over the years as you do more and more online stuff?
To be honest, no, it's actually been a positive experience. Remember though, the distance learning that I've been involved with is always very short term. It's only from like December 26th to right before the spring semester starts, or it's the month of June. So it's very intense. I think there's a reasonable self-selection bias. You don't go and take a class like that that's gonna have so much packed into so little time, unless you're an independent, self-motivated, highly, type A kind of student who wants to get some courses done in time where other people aren't. They're also spread all over the world when I do this and they don't know each other. Basically, we only have between 20 and 40 every session that we do. So it's not as big a group. And like I said, they tend to not know each other. So I've had very little concerns about any academic integrity violations over the years that I've been doing these distance learning classes through the School of Continuing Ed. One time I did have a group of students who were all from the same area that were working on the problems together, and we discovered that they were actually cheating with each other. And we had to deal with that. But, you know, we've been doing this for about 20 years now, twice a year, and we have not detect a significant amount of violations of academic integrity.
Thanks. How about TMN46? Have your hand up.
Hi, I'm sorry about that. This is Tracy Nathans-Kelly, and I'm over in engineering communication. I've been teaching online since about 1997, all different kinds of ways. And I think somebody mentioned this point earlier. We have to remember what we're doing now is not best practice. It can't be, right? This is triage teaching at its best. And so we have to do the best that we can. An online course, you know, takes a year or two to actually develop and to test and to put all these things in place. So just other instructors that I've been working with, I've really been asking them to just, it doesn't have to be perfect, right? And the more transparent that we are with our students that we're trying our best, it's not going to be perfect, and we don't expect perfection from them either. I think that's going to be the most transparent and honest answer that we can give them. And so it you know, there's a huge difference between what we're doing now and a truly pedagogically sound online course. That being said, I'm teaching a communications course, and then I'm also partnered with two games design courses. And we're taking very different strategies there at the baseline. For my communications course, teaching after all these years, and knowing who I had in my classroom, I knew I couldn't do anything synchronously. Live Zoom is not going to work. I've got people now scattered all over the globe. And so it's completely unfair to them to demand that they show up, you know, for a live Zoom lecture. That's just not going to work. So I do offer the, as somebody just a couple minutes ago said, live Zoom office hours. And I'm getting about half each time so far showing up and asking various questions, which is great. Everybody's been active. And so that's very encouraging. In the games design course, we had the most amazing thing happen. We were actually having a TA meeting when they announced we're closing on March 13th. Like our TA meeting was starting the moment that email came out. And so instead of having our usual TA meeting, we said, okay, what are we gonna do? And the TAs came up with all the solutions that have proven to be the strongest workable items for our class, and which is really great. So we're using a combination. We already had Piazza in place, and we don't use Canvas. We use a content management system over in CS. And but what we added that was kind of unique was going to Discord, which functions quite a bit like Slack, but they can also upload all kinds of different code and code snippets and pictures and live interactions. Again, like a lot of IRCs, Slack has a lot of those capabilities, but for ours in particular, Discord has been great. The quality has been really high. They can talk in their teams. Like, it doesn't matter if class is running or not. If I open up the Discord channel, those students are in there working with each other day and night. So there's something about that platform that appealed to the students and the way that they interacted with each other. And I really credit our TAs for tapping into that knowledge. And so I would say, ask them. They know, right? We should rely on their expertise of, you know, what are the cool kids doing nowadays and nothing else. So I'll go ahead and mute here.
Thanks a lot. I'd like to hear from, we have different kinds of lab, you know, the life science, the physical science, people that have, you know, real labs as part of the schedule, and how you're managing that. I'm sort of curious about that. So does anyone out there who'd like to comment on how you do labs? I'd be real interested. Jill, questions on the chat.
Someone was interested in hearing from perhaps someone who teaches a language course and how those are going. But that's about it.
Okay. Well, in the meantime, David Delchamps has his hand up again. So, David.
You asked about TAs. I'm worried about that. I have, for my undergrad course, my sophomore course, I have six TAs. And one of them is a PhD student who's still here. One of them is an international MN student who's still here. They're both very engaged. The other TAs, we had a meeting before they left. It sounded like everything was going to be cool, but I've had a hard time, you know, poking them into responding to stuff. One of them has a prelim problem with her to grade in South Florida. So I got my fingers crossed, but I'm not sure. I think everybody's kind of still fuzzed out by this whole thing. Another thing is that I did want to chime in and say and that I agree with part of what Risa was saying about the I think, inferiority of this versus, yes, it is triage teaching. It's not a carefully planned online experience, but, and I know we're trying to keep a positive attitude, and I'm giving the dean the benefit of the doubt, but I'm hearing a little bit of a drumbeat like, oh, this is showing us the way forward. This is showing us new opportunities for online education. We have to think about this. And I'm a little worried about that because it reminds me of the jubilant message I got when they said, hey, guess what? We're improving the engineering library by getting rid of all the books, you know, which came out about 5 years ago. And I don't want to hear about that. You know, I'm not ready to move into that mode. And I think a lot of my colleagues in the humanities whom I've talked to feel the same way. I don't want to speak for them, but I do want to echo what Risa said about that. I think it's important.
Chris Schaefer.
Hey, Greg. Hi, Chris Schaefer from Biomedical Engineering. I hate to just keep saying the same thing, but I want to also pick up on that point. I think it would be, I agree, all of us are going to learn how to better engage with our students using these remote learning tools. I can't imagine that, I imagine there will be education researchers that look into how aspects of this work well and don't work well for different environments. But any kind of top-down push from the university to incorporate more of this across all classes would be a really, in my view, negative outcome that could come out of this. We should encourage people to find ways to integrate this into their courses going forward in the ways they want or the ways they don't. But at the same time, I would be reassured if there was a public statement from the university about the primacy of in-person instruction at Cornell University, and that is going to be a guiding goal in educational policy. I asked for that in the College of Engineering faculty meeting and didn't really get it.
So we want a reaffirmation of the value of the residential experience.
And in-person teaching, the primacy of in-person teaching.
Well, again, it's virtually everything is called into question. You know, like last week, we were thinking hard about grading and all that. Everything is being reevaluated. So that is healthy. And to rethink the importance of in-person teaching, and we take it for granted. Now we don't take it for granted. And now we have it's an opportunity to really think hard about these things and to assert ourselves. Jill, anything on the chat line?
We have a comment that Reef, REEF polling app has been very smooth and was easily transferable from the clicker questions to Reef. But then there's some concerns about whether FERPA compliance is an issue with Discord. And in the past, people have used Twitch or YouTube live streaming lectures, but there are FERPA issues with that. Someone commented about FERPA needs to be revisited, but then someone gave some information about CTI and Slack, and that if we don't pass FERPA protected items via those channels, they are cautiously okay with it. There's a statement on the CTI site about Slack, for example, and then they provided a link to the CTI office in chat if anyone's interested.
Oh, Lisa Nishi, I think you're on. Do you have any, I know you've thought about the FERPA side of things, maybe a quick overview on how faculty should be thinking about that? Lisa, you there? Okay, maybe not. Again, I'd like to hear from someone in the life sciences, someone in the physical sciences, how you're handling labs, people in the humanities, how that's, what that's like, anyone who runs a studio. Again, it'd be really nice to have a variation here across the different venues that we teach at. Well, this is like office hours and nobody comes. come on now, don't be shy.
Beth Miles is asking to speak.
Yeah, great.
It's Beth Millis and performing in media arts.
Great.
Hi. I teach an intro to acting class. with a lot of across colleges and across disciplines. About 20 students are in that class. And then I teach a studio class about absurdism, which seems perfectly timed right now, where it's a project-oriented theory practice class. The acting class, obviously everyone in our department is working overtime to figure out how to translate the kind of experiential learning of an acting class. Mm-hmm. And I would say, like, in response to your opening question, the students have been amazing and their angst and anxiety is palpable. And I feel such a community with them right now and a sort of warmth and a desire to be there, but also have heard individually from students about the anxiety they're currently experiencing. But I hear that individually. We don't talk about that so much in the classroom. I think there's a great relief to have something practical to do. In the acting class, I feel like it's almost impossible to translate directly what we do. So we have to change it, as many of us are, and adjust and make alteration. Although we can continue to do scene work and have conversations about scenes and plays, they can't see live performance at all, which is a large part of that class, or experience live performance, but they can work in intense groups. So I would say, well, it's a humbling experience. We're learning more than I expected, and there's obviously challenges that daily we're combating. And I guess the only weird thing that I would say is that we usually begin acting classes with warm-ups and group work. I found that doing those kind of warm-ups in Zoom, it's not just almost comical. It feels like a waste of time. You know, it feels like a waste of 10 minutes of class time, and I sort of am grappling with that, but that's sort of a pragmatic thing. So that's what I have. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's very interesting. Very interesting indeed. Thank you. Joe?
Nothing on chat, no.
Anyone out there in the life sciences, please.
Charlie Walker, how about?
Okay, Charlie, what's up?
I teach a small seminar in which the students select a paper from the research literature and then present it to the group who then argues about it. And first thing I had to do was move the time because some of our students from California. And so I moved it to 4:30, which is obviously a prohibited time. And so it was free for them all. And what has happened is the students have done an exceedingly professional job in presenting these papers to the group. But what has been very hard is to get a lot of discussion going back and forth. And I think that's what we've got to work on. But what impressed me was the polish that these students in their presentation of a paper really were able to provide to the group.
Okay, thank you.
So I have a comment from Professor Ginsberg. Agreement with the comments regarding the inferiority of the online teaching environment compared to in person, and suspect the students agree, but we're sometimes out of touch. What if it turns out that they have no problem with it and the university administration decides this is a good way to increase revenue?
That's certainly a possibility. Paul, if you're on the line, you're in physics. I'm not sure if you're any grapevine about how the lab courses are going.
Well, I think Natasha Holmes was online. I thought I saw something from her before regarding clickers, and she runs the labs. She runs some lab courses in physics, and she would know much better than me. I'm in InfoSci this semester.
Right, okay.
So we have a comment about something ironic regarding office hours. I've had a number of graduate students at Cornell Tech taking my course Info 6010 remote from New York City. Those students were attending office hours remote all along and have continued to engage quite usefully via Zoom for the past 3 weeks with occasional sirens audible in the background. The Ithaca grad students, on the other hand, haven't been using Zoom hours at all.
Well, office hours often correlate with exams and things like that. Perhaps this in this first week where it's a lower, not as much showing up at office hours. Any dialogue with students about grade options? Did any of you talk about how to give advice to students about how they should think about grades? Anything like that out there you'd wish to share? I see a hand, Chris Schaefer.
Hi, Charlie. I had first a question, and then I would like to share what I've announced and chosen to do for my class. So first, my presumption is the reason that we have extended the date for dropping a course or changing the grade basis to the end of class, and then opened this door for a petition to withdraw from the class or change the grade basis until the end of finals, has to do with some kind of one-way switch in PeopleSoft between deciding what courses you're in and faculty entering grades. Is that correct?
I think so. Is anyone from the registrar office on, or Lisa Nishi, are you on?
Mostly that.
Okay. I'm quite sure there are definitely constraints imposed by PeopleSoft. I know that for a fact. I'll try to get an answer to that one. But you had a second thing you were going to say, Chris.
Because if I look at the policy as a whole, I read it as a policy that's trying to allow our students to tell us with as much information as possible whether or not their learning environment has impacted their evaluation. So what right. I promised I would do for my students is I would give them a letter grade that's based on an assessment of work completed to date before the end of the semester, before the end of instruction. And that then I would give them a final letter grade communicated just to them before the end of finals. And that I would be an advocate and support any petition they chose to file to change something in that intervening period. I would work to ensure that that petition was honored. I think that creates an environment where students are encouraged to engage with our classes and learn, and they can decide after they see what course grade they would get, whether or not the learning environment they had negatively impacted them. I am fully aware that that is going to lead to grades in my class this semester that will be A's and S's, and I'm completely fine with that and think it's the appropriate thing to do.
Yeah. Well, in normal times, you know, we often make a big point on giving students as much feedback during the semester as possible, especially before the traditional drop deadline. And what Chris is saying there is this is a heightened form of feedback showing up right there at the end of the semester. And right, so I think that's an excellent strategy and point of view.
Jill, there's a question on the language courses. Do you want to read that one out?
You're muted, Jill.
It would be, it's from Itziar Rodriguez de Rivera, where they ask, it would be interesting to know how language courses are going, since these are classes that meet more frequently and depend a lot on direct interaction. Mary Redmond, Associate Chair of Romance Studies, is on this meeting, and would Mary care to report on this issue? I mean, I do see Mary on the list of participants, but maybe she's...
Right, I see that.
Yeah, not being... But anyone else who's teaching language could chime in answer to Itziar's question. I mean, I'm aware we have only 5 minutes left, and there was a thing, I mean, Charlie and I always ask what other inputs all of you would need. You know, I hear a lot about the levels of stress amongst the faculty as well. As we gear up, we're teaching more than we thought we could teach. There's also, of course, always the specter of, job loss, economic recession, the pandemic, families in difficulty, and so on. So we always want to end with asking what else we can do for all of you to make this as, I don't know what the word is, Charlie, as easy. It's never going to be easy, but as easy as possible. So do share those, you know, what you need with us. You can do it over email, or you can, we have 5 minutes here. You can raise some issues. I hear very strongly a lot of concern around the university, you know, maybe thinking this is a good idea and wanting to make a shift into online teaching. You know, and this is something that we'll have to continue to sort of, you know, take a pulse on and really be on top of, and maybe make a matter, you know, make it as a matter of a point of discussion in one of the faculty senate meetings. But in the meantime, there are just the everyday stresses of having to deal with this and to last till the end of the semester, with illness and loss and grief and everything else in the process as well. So anything else that we can do, let us know, please. And so, I mean, I'll end there. Charlie, any last words from you?
All right, so I just echo all those things. It's a tricky thing here. We have just getting through the day, getting through the week is a struggle. But we do have to think, at least in the back of our minds, long-term, and we have a plate full of sort of ongoing things we have to work with. So again, we're very mindful of workload, trying to be very careful about encroaching on your time. We'll just do one day at a time. We're very happy to stage these meetings, but we have to sort of read the population to see how much they're needed, and everyone is screened out and whatever. Anyway, in the absence of any raised hands there, we want to thank you very much for coming and contributing. This audio will be posted online, and we'll remind you where to go see that or listen. Okay, so thank you very much. That's the end of the meeting.
Thanks, Charlie. Thanks, Jill.
Thank you.